HP hopes she didn't notice what happened over the weekend.
But investors are clearly paying attention.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, August 9th. A scandal at Hewlett-Packard means it's time to find a new CEO.
Also, Louisiana fishers and shrimpers say, come on in, the water and the food are fine. And this new audiobook might be too hot for rush hour. But first...
This morning, McDonald's told us that its customers bought a lot of fruit smoothies and frappes in July. Sales were up. The big meat producer, Tyson Foods, said its profits rose in the last 3 months. Just a couple of corporations and a long line of American companies that say they are making money. It's just not translating into many American jobs yet. Here to explain is senior economist Julia Coronado at BNP Paribas. She joins us every Monday from New York. Hello, Julia.
Good morning.
So I get that we're in a slowdown now, but these corporations have so much money in the bank. Does that mean that eventually they're going to hire more Americans? He asked hopefully.
Well, you know, what we're seeing is that companies have adjusted the scale of their operations down to the point where they are profitable in the new, more sluggish economy. Now, whether they in turn invest these profits that they're making now here or abroad, or whether they invest in productivity-enhancing equipment or new employees, really depends to some extent on where we go from here. And it becomes a bit of a chicken-and-egg situation. If consumers begin to spend more freely, companies in the U.S. will probably need to hire more here. If they remain on the sidelines, then the recovery in the labor market is going to be painfully slow.
Okay, so then I guess our leaders are trying to fertilize the egg or resuscitate the chicken. What should Congress and the Federal Reserve do now, Julia, and please predict the future?
Well, Congress is actively debating this issue. They've provided some more unemployment insurance recently. They've provided some more aid to states. They are beginning to debate the fate of the Bush tax cuts. So they really are working through these issues. On the other hand, they're getting a loud message from voters that voters really aren't very tolerant of more deficit spending. So in some senses, they're a bit limited in their options. Now, the Fed is carefully thinking through its options, and they are mandated to have the economy operating at maximum sustainable employment, which we are definitely not at. So I think it's more likely that we could see something from the Fed in the near future.
Well, they'll be talking about that tomorrow at the Federal Reserve, and so will we. Julia Coronado, senior economist at BNP Paribas. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
At Hewlett-Packard, former CEO Mark Hurd is out, and the search for a new leader is on. You may have heard, Hurd resigned on Friday in a scandal involving allegations of sexual harassment and fudged expense reports. Analysts say HP is hunting for a new leader at a critical time. And Marketplace's Jeff Horwitz joins us live. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Bill.
What is at stake for Hewlett-Packard here?
HP's had a pretty good run, you know, since Mark Hurd took over 5 years ago. The company's worth about twice as much as it was then. They passed up Dell in the PC market. They're still the leader in printers. And they've spent about $20 billion buying up companies to expand into areas like servers and smartphones. But that's exactly why Mark Hurd leaves the next CEO with a big challenge. Here's Larry Dignan. He's the editor of ZDNet.
When you think about HP, what does it want to be when it grows up? Right now, it's a little bit of everything.
Well, and here comes this PR hassle that we're talking about, Jeff. But does it seem like it's more than that for HP?
Well, investors are certainly nervous about it. Mark Hurd was known as very effective, but also kind of a boring bean counter type. Dignan actually thinks HP is due for someone more in the visionary vein. In fact, he sees the scandal as maybe a lucky break.
All that stuff aside, you know, I sort of wonder if this was just a time to change coaches.
Meaning if you can change coaches, then you can change the game plan.
Yeah, but what game plan, right? Do you focus on the core business, computers and printers? In that case, there are a lot of HP vice presidents who like that job, or maybe you nab an executive from somewhere like IBM. But HP's also trying to make a big play in networking, so maybe you hire someone away from Cisco. Or is the future all about smartphones and taking on the iPad? There's speculation perhaps HP goes for the jugular, tries to pick off the chief operating officer of Apple.
Marketplace's Jeff Horwitz. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, August 9th. I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects the United States. Imagine a stack of $1 million bills, and then multiply that 75,000 times. That's how much the Chinese government reportedly plans to spend every year on clean energy technologies. Chinese state media are reporting the $75 billion will be used to boost wind, nuclear, solar, and carbon storage. Our China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
China's proposed clean energy budget is three times as large as the entire budget of the U.S. Department of Energy. The environment's going to need all the help it can get to contend with thousands of these. A train carrying coal winds through a mine tunnel in Shanxi province. To keep up with the country's exploding growth, China builds, on average, one coal-fired power plant a week.
What China is doing, which is good, is they're building the most efficient power plants in the world.
Deborah Seligson is head of the China Climate and Energy Program at the World Resources Institute.
The next challenge for China will be whether they choose to take some of the carbon dioxide that is emitted from those power plants and start storing it underground.
China has a handful of pilot programs that are doing just that. And with this new funding, observers say China will be well-positioned to eventually sell its carbon storage technology. It's been quite a successful formula for China. It's done quite well exporting solar panels and wind turbines to the U.S. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
As contentious as it is here at home, controlling who crosses the border is just as big of an issue over in Europe. Latest estimates show there are anywhere from around 2 to 4 million undocumented migrants. Tens of thousands more people are smuggled in every year, although annual numbers are down due to the economic downturn. Christopher Wirth has more from northern France.
At the port in Calais, one of the car ferries that run between France and England prepares to depart. Every year, thousands of refugees and illegal migrants try to sneak into the UK, hidden under trucks, loaded onto boats like this, or on the trains that run from here to London through the Channel Tunnel. Mathilde Tiberghien is with the United Nations Refugee Agency.
It's really dangerous to cross to the UK. Some people die.
But for many, the situation is even more dangerous at home. Ports all along the north coast of France have become the last jumping-off point for people fleeing conflict in countries such as Afghanistan, Iraq, and Somalia. Many are often spurred on by false rumors about the ability to find work quickly in the UK and to access housing and education.
Smugglers will often tell lies to migrants because it's their economic interest that migrants cross to the UK because an additional journey means additional money.
Not far from the very boats he hopes will ferry him to England, a 26-year-old Sudanese man relies on the one meal a day he gets at this soup kitchen next to the port. He says he paid smugglers $3,000 American to escape the Darfur region of Sudan, much of it borrowed from friends and family. Like other migrants, he's expected to pay that debt once he settles in Europe.
So what do you think it's going to be like when you get to the UK?
Maybe I'll get a job there, maybe I'll get married there. All my dreams.
But those who do make it across often find it hard to make those dreams a reality. Life in the UK is often harder than they expected, and asylum seekers can't work while their applications are being considered, a process that can take years. But as Tiberghien points out, from Calais, you can actually see the coast of Britain. And after crossing thousands of miles, it's hard to give up after coming so far. In Calais, France, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Time is running out for BlackBerry in Saudi Arabia. Authorities there have given the phone's makers until today to reach a deal. If they don't, it could mean another shutdown of services. The BBC's Ben Thompson sent this report from Dubai.
Reports over the weekend suggest BlackBerry maker Research in Motion has now agreed to some of Saudi's demands, most crucially the installation of a server within the country. That would give authorities there direct access to messages. Saudi Arabia says that's a deal BlackBerry has already granted to other foreign governments, including the United States. But on Friday, Saudi Arabia blocked access to emails, messaging and web surfing. The services were later restored, but for users in Saudi Arabia, that uncertainty makes doing business difficult. John Sfakianakis is a chief economist at Bank Saudi Fransi.
I have to come to the office if my business doesn't find a suitable alternative. So either I have to come to the office or log in from home. That means that when I'm traveling or I am very mobile, that I cannot use a BlackBerry to communicate. And so that is a big inconvenience.
But whilst a deal in Saudi Arabia would avoid a ban in that country, it does spark further concerns. Other governments in the region will now be expecting the same deal. And for users across the Middle East, it raises even more worries about the access governments could soon have to their private messages. In Dubai, I'm the BBC's Ben Thompson for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, August 9th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. The NCAA recently signed a broadcast deal for almost $11 billion. With money like that at stake, it's time to grow up, college athletes. Reporter Sally Herschip says you just can't afford a youthful mistake in the age of the internet.
Kevin Long makes his living collecting bad words. He keeps a list, 450 of them to be exact.
Well, you've got the George Carlin words that you can't say on TV, anything that deals with violence, sex, drugs.
You know, words like those expletives gave Long an idea. He founded a software company, U-Diligence, which monitors college student social media. But not just any students, college athletes. Schools pay U-Diligence between $1,500 and $5,000 a year to flag updates, tweets, and posts with racy words. When young players stumble online, their questionable judgment can be seen by enough viewers to fill a stadium.
In this new day of social media, employees, students, and athletes are quickly finding out it's better to keep your thoughts to yourself.
We have learned more about a UT player who was kicked off of the football team.
Sources tell Fox 7 he posted a racial slur on his Facebook page. And wrote,
so more and more schools are keeping tabs on their team's social networking. Athletes allow themselves to be monitored, so it's perfectly legal. And over two dozen schools use U-Diligence. Joe Favorito does sports marketing for the pros. He says money from athletics can reach all over campus, funding scholarships, art, and music. It can't afford sloppy student situations.
They're selling sponsorships. So you can become the official bank of the University of Texas, or you could become, you know, the official insurance company of the University of Delaware.
And Favorito says crisis management is expensive. It can run $20,000 to $25,000 a month to clean up a school's reputation.
It's like insurance. If you don't have insurance and you have something catastrophic happen to you, you always pay a lot more in the end.
U-Diligence CEO Kevin Long says it's not just schools. Athletes are at risk, too. They've got their futures to think about. So he gives this advice. He calls it the mom rule. If you're not okay with your mom reading it, seeing it, or getting it in a text, think twice before putting it out there. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Patching is in the news big time. Apple says it has completed a security patch to stop cyber criminals from hacking into the operating system for iPhones and iPads. And tomorrow, Microsoft holds what techies are calling Monster Patch Tuesday. The company will supply 14 security fixes, repairing almost three dozen flaws. Marketplace's Janet Babin has that.
The 34 patches are for glitches in Windows, Internet Explorer, Microsoft Office, and Silverlight. This matches the record-setting number of fixes Microsoft released in October of last year. The patches help prevent hackers from tweaking computer programs to get at valuable user information. Daniel Bricklin co-created the first computer spreadsheet program and runs the company's software, Garden. He says users shouldn't be too troubled by these fixes. He says all complex software has bugs and vulnerabilities.
In the tech sphere, we like to know that our developers are looking for the bugs and are not only admitting them, they're fixing them.
Bricklin says the reason for the large number of glitches is that Microsoft is patching up programs that didn't exist a few years ago, like Vista and Windows 7. The more programs, the more bugs. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, August 9th. I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. I think I could live on a steady diet of delicious Gulf shrimp, spicy Cajun style. Which brings up the really tough question in the Big Easy this morning. How do you market the catch of the day from waters tainted with gobs of oil? The Louisiana Food Service Expo wraps up today in New Orleans, and everybody's talking about the effects of the BP spill on their huge contribution to the region's economy. Marketplace's Eve Troe is in NOLA. Good morning, Eve.
Hi, Bob.
So have you had a po' boy since you've been down there?
I've had a few po' boys. I had one catfish, one shrimp, and one shrimp and oyster, all with lots of hot sauce.
Well, it sounds like you're convinced, but what's the industry trying to do to combat this idea the seafood is contaminated?
Well, the main thing that they say they need is one very digestible, if you will, message for the public. And that might be something like a sticker that certifies seafood in the grocery store as Gulf safe. And they'd put that on every package, and it would be backed up by all the government agencies that are testing the seafood every day. One representative from Alaska was here in town, and he said that Alaska spent more than $100 million on marketing just to repair the image of their seafood after the Exxon Valdez spill. And that was more than 20 years ago. And the Louisiana representative said they just don't have that kind of money.
And yet the question remains, is it safe really? Do we know?
Well, both the EPA and the FDA were in town, and they say that zero samples have come back showing oil in the seafood. They haven't seen oil or the dispersant building up in the tissues of oysters, crab, shrimp, or fish. But for the long term, you know, for next year's catch, they really can't be sure. And the state governor, Bobby Jindal, has actually asked BP for more than $170 million to pay for testing for all of the seafood over the next, you know, 2 to 3 years or longer, because the industry is very aware that just one incident, you know, if one person gets sick, it's just all over for Gulf seafood. So the stakes are very high.
Mm-hmm. And so all the goings on at the Food Expo now, how much fishing is really going on in Louisiana?
Well, 70% of Louisiana waters are open for fishing. They're hoping for 85% by next week, and that's when shrimp season starts. And some big-name chefs in town say they are cooking with Louisiana seafood, but they actually feel the need to eat it in front of guests in some cases. They're also using maps to show them, you know, where the seafood's coming from. Plus, the Super Bowl winners, the Saints, will be at the White House today. They're bringing the seafood folks along with them, and they hope that images of President Obama eating a little bit of a 30-foot-long shrimp po' boy will do some good for the industry.
Well, I'm heading down there in a few weeks. Save some for me, Eve.
I will do so, Bob.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The field of available jobs just got smaller at employment centers in Britain. They can no longer advertise jobs for what we'll call adult performers. Until last week, government-run help-wanted offices in the UK could offer job seekers the chance to work as strippers or lap dancers. But as the BBC's Rebecca Singer reports, a change in the rules means that's no longer allowed.
For years, the British government's been criticised for allowing the adult entertainment industry to advertise in their job centres. Chris Grayling is the Work and Pensions Minister.
We've had over the years a steady flow of adverts, very often in clubs for pole dancers and lap dancers, but also increasingly for women who strip in front of a webcam and it's broadcast on the internet.
At the last count, there were 350 posts for topless waitresses, nude cleaners and strippers, all advertised in government job centres. But in tough economic times, Grayling doesn't want people to feel they have to take this type of work in order to pay the bills. But some adult performers are angry at what this new ban implies. Giselle is training to be a lawyer, but also works as a lap dancer and didn't want to use her last name.
To my mind, that classifies us as sex trade workers. People have these preconceived ideas about what lap dancing is, but it's actually not that.
The ban doesn't include jobs like working as a bouncer or a cleaner in a nightclub. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
OK, as long as we're on the subject, let's wrap up with a final note that shows just how liberated the UK really is.
A British publisher is planning to release a new audiobook that might be a little risky to listen to while driving. It is a spoken version of the Kama Sutra. Tanya Franks, the British actress who just finished voicing the text, says she was a little nervous at first, but turned out to be completely relaxed and had a great time.
In fact, she says the only thing missing was the cigarette afterwards. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.